Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take your source material, maybe articles, research, even just notes you've gathered, and really pull out the core insights.
Yeah, the aim is to give you that shortcut to being genuinely informed, maybe find some surprising connections, and, well, hopefully keep it interesting along the way.
Exactly. And today, using the material you've shared, we're diving into a really intense period. We're talking conflict, big social changes, and some deep, deep questions about justice, power, and faith.
It's a fascinating time. And our goal here is to walk you through the key events, the forces driving them, and the personal stories that make it all real. It all comes straight from the material provided.
Right. Stepping into a world that feels, you know, long ago, but maybe has echoes even today when we think about power and protest.
Definitely.
So let's start where these sources kick off with what happens after the main fight seems lost for the peasant rebels. They've technically lost this two-year war, but they're still out there, still active.
And they're doing something specific, according to the sources, burning monasteries.
Which seems odd after a big defeat.
Well, it wasn't just random violence. The sources are pretty clear on this. The rebels and their leader, Andreas Barthel, saw these places, monasteries, church circles, castles too, as the actual source of all the betrayal and tyranny they'd suffered.
Ah, okay. So it's symbolic but also targeted. Barthel's quoted saying something like, "Brothers, the source of all the betrayals is these castles, monasteries, and church circles."
Exactly. It shows they saw the religious powers as deeply complicit, you know, right alongside the nobles.
But the sources also give us this really gritty picture of what their lives were actually like then, hiding in the forest.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't glamorous. Mostly untrained peasants living rough. The material mentions constant hardship, not enough food, leading to infighting, jealousy. It sounds pretty miserable.
A desperate situation, really. Not some heroic continuation.
No. And even the leader, Andreas, the sources say he got frustrated sometimes, having to sort out squabbles, constantly reminding them why they were still fighting, why they were enduring all this.
Right. So from that grim reality, the sources really zoom in on one particular figure, a very fiery one, Thomas Müntzer.
Ah, Müntzer. Yes. The material really brings his revolutionary energy to life, especially his speeches leading up to that key battle, Frankenhausen.
What was his message? The sources mentioned specific calls.
Oh, yes. Death to the infidels, freedom, justice, powerful stuff. But it wasn't just political slogans. It came from a radical religious viewpoint.
And interestingly, his fight wasn't just against the princes, was it?
No, not at all. The sources make a big point of his clash with Martin Luther. He apparently really wanted a showdown with Luther.
Really? Why?
Well, Luther had denounced the peasant rebels quite harshly, and the sources say Müntzer was almost looking forward to seeing Luther squirm like a fox if the rebellion actually succeeded. A deep personal and ideological rift there.
That adds another layer to the whole religious turmoil of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then there's this moment. The sources describe Prince Philip sending a peace offer.
Right, an envoy arrives. The deal is basically surrender, admit you were wrong, and maybe some of you will be spared, but they'd have to hand over Müntzer.
In Münzer's reaction?
Pure defiance. Tells the envoy, nope, they won't surrender him, and if the prince thinks he's strong enough, he should come get him himself.
Wow, you can feel the tension. But the sources say this offer did have an effect on his followers.
It did. Some started to look grim, maybe have second thoughts. There were murmurs of accepting the deal.
So how did Müntzer handle that wavering morale?
He confronted it head on. Asked the crowd directly, did anyone think they should accept? And the sources described this long, heavy silence.
That silence says a lot, doesn't it? Fear, loyalty, maybe just confusion.
Exactly. Then he pivots, using scripture to rally them. Citing Matthew, the story of Jehoshaphat arguing God was actually fighting with them.
He had some powerful lines, according to the sources.
Oh, yeah. Iron is struck while it is hot. Do not let blood cool your sword. And crucially, the war is not yours, but God's. He's telling them God is on their side. Don't worry about the enemy's numbers.
Powerful rhetoric. But then comes the Battle of Frankenhausen itself. And there's this strange detail the sources mention, a rainbow.
Yes. Right before the attack, a rainbow appears, and it was apparently a symbol on the rebels' flag.
So that must have caused some confusion.
It did, momentarily. The sources mention one of the prince's soldiers, Hans, feeling this jolt of fear, wondering if it was some kind of divine sign for the rebels.
But it didn't last.
No. Ultimately, the sources say the peasants, mostly untrained, just panicked when the professional soldiers attacked. They scattered like startled ducks, is the phrase used.
And the result was brutal.
Utterly devastating. 5,000 peasants killed, 600 captured. The sources even mention Andreas, the forest leader we heard about earlier, trying to shield Muenzer and help him escape amidst the chaos.
But Muenzer didn't get away then.
Not for long. He was captured later, near Mühlhausen, tried to blend in, pretending to be sick and weak.
And Prince Philip interrogated him. What did Muenzer say?
It's interesting. According to the sources, he kind of deflected, claiming he hadn't actually started the rebellion. Said something like they had already rebelled.
What about their goals? Did he explain, though?
Oh, he was blunt about that. The sources quote him saying, "We wanted everything to be common, whoever needed according to their situation." And the kicker: if the princes and lords wouldn't agree, their heads would be cut off or they'd be hanged.
Pretty radical stuff, uncompromising.
Absolutely. Then came the torture, ordered by Count Ernest, who the sources say was eager for this confrontation.
Did Muenzer break?
Confess. Apparently not in the way Ernest wanted. The sources know Ernest's disappointment. Muenzer didn't seem to show regret or guilt, even under torture.
Any last wishes?
Just one, really. According to the material, he asked for his few belongings, books, clothes to go to his wife, Odalie. The sources add this poignant detail that he was thinking of her and their newborn baby.
And what happened to Audley? The sources mention her fate.
Yes, and it's incredibly harsh. She was apparently forced to watch her husband's execution. Oh, terrible.
And then exiled with her baby that very same day. It really underscores just the brutal personal cost of all this.
A stark reminder amidst the big battles in politics.
Though Andreas, who saw it all, apparently found some admiration for Muenzer's courage right to the end. He kept his composure, according to Andreas's perspective in the sources.
Okay, so that's Muenzer's story, a really central thread. Let's switch perspectives now, using the sources to look at the rulers, Prince Philip, King Johann. How are they approaching this?
Well, the sources show them in, military planning mode, praising their soldiers, discussing tactics. There's a mention of Hans, the soldier, suggesting moving the cannons to a better spot on a hill. Practical stuff.
Were they just focused on military victory?
Mostly, but there's also a sense of strategic patience.
Yeah.
Knight Albrecht advises them to basically wait it out a bit, let the rebels' own internal problems and lack of supplies weaken them before striking hard.
Smart tactics. And once they had the upper hand, then came the assertion of order. And the sources make it clear this was swift and brutal. They describe public executions in Coburg, June 10th, 1525. 63 rebels sentenced just on that one day.
What was that scene like? The sources describe it.
Yeah, quite vividly. A
Yeah.
crowded market square, families begging for mercy, soldiers holding people back. Pater Balthazar is mentioned, offering the condemned a cross to kiss before, well, before the end.
A very public display of power returning.
Absolutely. The king and judges arrive formally, the sentences are read out, and the sources note this chilling observation that death had just become commonplace. The soldiers burying the bodies quickly, no mourning, just this growing anger at the rebels for causing all the disruption.
Right. Now, amidst all this large-scale conflict, the sources bring in some other individuals, people whose lives kind of weave through these different worlds.
Yes, we get glimpses into Vest Castle, for example. We meet Zingara. She's the daughter of the laundry woman, Christina Roth.
And what's her story?
She feels trapped, apparently. The sources say she longs for a different life, maybe something noble or joining the church choir. And importantly, she's in love with someone named Matthias.
Matthias, we'll come back to him. Who else is at the castle, according to the sources?
There's Veronica, Elizabeth, who is Knight Fritz's wife, and even the famous painter Lucas Cranach is mentioned. He's there painting portraits, including one of Knight Fritz.
Knight Fritz, wasn't he the one killed by rebels?
That's right. The sources remind us about the attack on Untersimo Castle. Andreas and Fabian, the forest rebels, they were the ones who killed him. Elizabeth was there when it happened, so these connections are tight.
It's a small world, even amidst the chaos. And there was one noble who felt differently.
Ah, yes, Prince Georg. A brief mention in the sources, but significant. He apparently felt some pity for the rebels, acknowledged that the nobility kind of owed their lifestyle to the peasants. He even suggested maybe their voices should be heard.
A rare note of empathy from that side, based on this material.
It stands out. Now, stepping back again to the wider context the sources provide, we circle back to Martin Luther.
Right, his story is summarized briefly. Challenging indulgences.
Which the sources say he called ink-stained rags. Basically, these papers the church sold, claiming to reduce time in purgatory. That challenge is what made him famous.
But then, as we heard, His stance on the peasant rebels later becomes incredibly harsh.
Shockingly so. The quote mentioned in the sources is that they should be slaughtered like animals. It highlights just how complex and, frankly, contradictory some figures were during this period.
The sources also touch on another big fear looming over Europe then, right? The Ottoman Turks.
Yes, that threat was very real. Events like the Battle of Mohas, the Siege of Vienna, these are mentioned as backdrop. People were genuinely scared.
And Luther had opinions on this too.
He did. Saw the Turks as, well, servants of the devil, God's punishment for European sins, but also somehow allied with the Pope. It's complicated theology.
How did he suggest dealing with them?
A mix of military force and prayer. But his advice to ordinary people, peasants, if the Turks came, the sources report it as incredibly brutal. Destroy everything, don't surrender, because horrible things would happen to their children. He also criticized the Quran's view of Christ.
Wow. And there was one more big idea bubbling up then, mentioned in the sources, something about the stars.
Right, Copernicus. His idea that the earth goes around the sun, not the other way around. The sources note that some people were already dismissing it because it seemed to contradict the Bible, specifically a story in the book of Joshua.
So religious upheaval, political rebellion, and challenges to the basic understanding of the universe. What a time.
It really shows how interconnected all these intellectual and social currents were, often filtered through religious belief.
Okay, let's follow one of those personal threads more closely now. Matthias, the one Zingara loves. What's his journey, according to these sources?
Well, he starts out with doubts, questioning life in a monastery, even some Bible stories. So he leaves and heads to Erfurt.
Was life easier there?
Not at first, no. The sources describe real hardship. Poverty, cold, hunger. There's a specific moment where he meets a Peter Kaulbach outside a closed church, gets some soup, some advice on finding work, a small kindness.
Does he find work?
He tries shoe repair. Meets a couple of guys who become important later, Paul, who plays harmonica and works as a porter, and Lorenz, a shoemaker. He ends up working for Lorenz.
And all this time, he's connecting with Zingara back at the castle.
Yes, through letters. The sources emphasize this deepening bond, shared dreams, her feeling trapped, him longing for freedom and for her. He plays the flute, writes poetry for her, trying to bridge that gap. It seems his eventual return to Coburg, mentioned later, is really about her.
Now, Erfurt itself, where Matthias lands, is also a microcosm of the times, right? The sources detail religious tensions there, too.
Absolutely. You have Peter Kling trying to sort of revive the Catholic churches, like Nikolai Kirch and Lorenz Kirch. The city council had closed them down.
Was he successful?
It was a struggle. He was up against Protestant preachers like Raheep Eberlin. His attempt to start a Catholic guild gets disrupted. The sources mention a Stefan Benkler challenging the clergy's sincerity.
So resistance from within, too.
Right. But eventually, the sources say Klinge does succeed in getting the Catholic churches reopened. And this apparently boosts his standing, inspires followers like Lorenz, the shoemaker Matthias works for. Lorenz is so moved, he actually raises his workers' wages.
A small, tangible outcome of these bigger religious shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And the sources also mentioned the general mood in Erfurt.
Yes, the marketplace scene described sounds like a hotbed of social unrest. You've got well-dressed speakers, but also protests by the poor. The issues are about land, taxes, poverty, the same things fueling the wider peasant rebellion. It shows these tensions weren't just rural.
It really connects the dots between the countryside and the cities. Okay, now let's bring in another key figure whose past casts a shadow. Hans Winter, the soldier.
Right, Hans. And his younger half-brother, Peter. The sources give us Peter's reason for joining the rebels.
Which was?
Heartbreak, essentially. His love, Maria, died, and he felt God had abandoned him. A very personal motivation to join this huge, violent uprising.
And Peter's fate was tragic.
Yes. Killed in battle. And killed by Knight Fritz, the same knight whose castle Zingara lives near, whose portrait Cronach is painting.
And Hans. Hans was there.
He was fighting on the other side, the prince's side. But the sources say Hans found Peter's body and buried him personally, despite being enemies in the conflict. It's a powerful image.
That must have deeply affected Hans.
Profoundly. The sources talk about intense guilt, remorse, feeling he should have known Peter better, helped him more. He starts having nightmares.
Now, here's where it gets complicated, isn't it? The sources link Hans's guilt not just to Peter, but also somehow to Knight Fritz's death.
Exactly. It's ambiguous. They imply Hans feels guilt or maybe even knows something about Fritz's death, even though they also state clearly elsewhere that Andreas and Fabian killed Fritz.
So Hans feels guilty about his brother being killed by Fritz and also feels some kind of guilt related to Fritz's death.
That's how the sources present it. It's this knot of guilt and maybe hidden knowledge that seems to be tormenting him. We're left wondering what exactly his connection is.
And this internal struggle in Hans leads directly to a turning point for Matthias.
Yes. Matthias returns to Coburg. We assume it's to be near Zingara or maybe try to help her. And then, boom, he's accused of murdering Knight Fritz.
On what grounds? What's the evidence presented in the sources?
Several things. His flute was found near Fritz's body. His relationship and letters with Zingara are seen as motive, maybe trying to impress her or remove an obstacle. His past humiliations by Fritz are brought up, and his time in Erfurt is painted as suspicious hiding.
How does Matthias defend himself in the interrogation described?
He denies everything, of course. Says he lost the flute, escaping some dogs in the forest, learned about Fritz's death later, went to Erfurt purely for work.
Does the interrogator buy it?
Not according to the sources. They see motive, revenge, love, and opportunity being in the forest around the time Fritz died. His story about the dogs in Erfurt seems weak to them, maybe inconsistent. They dismiss it.
And the verdict?
Guilty. Sentenced to hang. The sources even give a specific date, March 10th, 1530.
So bleak. Does he get any final requests?
Yes. His flute and Zingara's locket, which apparently holds their letters. The sources mention him playing the flute in his cell. A final act of expression, maybe defiance.
This is where Hans steps back in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Driven by his guilt.
Precisely. Seeing Matthias, so young, facing execution for Fritz's death, it seems to connect directly to his guilt over Peter, who was killed by Fritz, and his own murky feelings about Fritz. He decides he can't let an innocent man hang.
So he plans an escape.
He does. The sources say he gets Paul and Lorenz, the guys Matthias met in Erfurt, involved. He tells them he needs help collecting a debt, a cover story involving 100 gulden, though he doesn't plan to keep the money. Lorenz is wary, but they agree.
How does the escape itself go down, according to the sources?
Hans stages it, pretends Matthias overpowers him. He even injures his own hand, ties himself up with a piece of cloth from Matthias' cell to make it look convincing. He tells Matthias where to go, where Paul and Lorenz will be waiting.
And Zingara? Is she involved?
Yes. Matthias throws a rope down from the laundry room window, presumably arranged somehow, and Zingara climbs down. Matthias follows, jumps, maybe falls awkwardly. The source mentions a fall.
Then they run.
Matthias runs towards the forest, towards the meeting point. The sources note he remembers losing his flute in that same forest before. It seems like the escape is underway. They're free.
Okay, so what's the immediate fallout described in the sources? How does Hans explain this?
He sticks to his story, overpowered by the prisoner. He gets suspended, waiting for King Johann to decide his fate. The sources mention him thinking about leaving, maybe becoming a carpenter somewhere like Augsburg. Reflecting on how being seen as an outcast has actually given him more empathy.
Does anyone else react?
Christina, Zingara's mother, has mentioned briefly she's worried about Hans. A small touch showing the ripple effects.
What about Zingara? Did she get away clean?
No. She's captured. Interrogated by Commander Joel. But the sources say she just clams up, won't say a word. Joel's frustrated, convinced she had help, that a rope must have been used.
How does King Johann react to the escape?
He discusses it with Joel. And his take, according to the sources, is quite interesting. He believes Matthias will come back for Zingara. Why? Because of love. He sees love as this powerful force that can make people overcome fear.
So he decides to use that.
Exactly. Use Zingara as bait. He orders the obvious security to be relaxed, but ramps up hidden surveillance. His logic, quoted in the sources, is chillingly pragmatic. Look at the environment through the eyes of the prey, and you will quickly find the method to trap it.
Wow. What about Hans? What happens to him?
The king deals with him, too. He pardons Hans, acknowledging his long service, but removes him from duty at the castle. The official reason is his age and this failure with the escape. So spared, but sidelined.
Right. Now, this is where the sources end, isn't it? And it's a strange ending.
It is. Very abrupt. After describing the escape plan, the escape itself seeming to succeed, Hans's aftermath, the king's plan, the very last scene jumps forward.
To when?
To March 10th, 1530, the exact date set for Matthias's execution. And the scene is back in the Coburg marketplace. A judge is reading out a sentence.
A sentence for whom?
For the murder of Knight Fritz. And the names read out are Matthias, son of Lorenz, and his accomplice, Zingara, daughter of Gunther.
Wait, so after detailing their escape, the source material ends with them seemingly about to be executed anyway?
That's exactly how it's presented in the material we have. It ends on that specific date with that specific sentence being read publicly.
So wrapping this up, what does all this mean? we've gone through this incredibly turbulent time following these threads from the sources of rebellion, power, faith, these deeply personal lives.
Yeah, from the peasants' desperate struggle and Mincer's radical vision, which ended so tragically, to the rulers calculating how to maintain control, and then these individuals, Matthias, Zingara, Hans, caught in the middle, their fates tangled up. It's a vivid picture, even with its ambiguities.
We definitely see the power of belief, don't we? Driving people to extremes. And the weight of guilt, how that shapes actions. We see the strategies of power and also these unpredictable human connections, like the love the king was trying to exploit.
All playing out against this backdrop of huge historical shifts.
Which brings us to that final, really jarring point in the sources. You're given this detailed story of an escape. You think maybe they made it.
Right. The plan, the execution of the escape, Hans covering for them.
And then the sources just end on their execution date with the sentence being read for them.
So the question these sources leave you with is, what does that tell us? This seeming contradiction right at the end. What does it suggest about fate or justice, or maybe just how relentless history can be for the ordinary people caught up in it, even when the narrative seems to offer a moment of hope?
A powerful question to ponder, drawn directly from the way this story is told in the material you shared, something that definitely sticks with you.